The Devil's Advocates radio show is broadcast under a time brokerage agreement between Devil Radio and Civic Media, Inc. Some portions of this program may be pre-recorded. Warning! You're about to listen to the greatest radio show ever, and due to contractual obligations and to shield our airwaves and corporate licensees from any semblance of liability, responsibility, and gullibility, we must tell you the views represented on this show are not necessarily those of this station or its management. This radio show contains differing points of view on current political topics, and due to the nature of its contents, it should be heard by everyone. Thank you for listening. Now live from the Civic Media Studios in Madison, Wisconsin, where the political party is just beginning, welcome to the Devil's Advocates radio show. Friends proving it's never personal, only politics.
Please allow me to introduce myself.
And now, here's your hosts, Dom and Crute.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates radio show, the Friday edition, the post-debate hangover edition. You know, hair of the dog, though, it's a happier, happy hour. Let's get back on this horse. We got a fine guest. Want to thank our most recent fine guest, Joe Sempecki, optimistic Tim strategist. And now we got another fine guest. He is the host of his own fine show, Amicus, a law review. He's Jim Santel, former U.S. attorney, friend of the Devil's Advocates. Jim, appreciate you answering the call.
Thanks, Jim.
Mike, I'm always answering your calls whenever they come in my direction.
Well,
today is no exception.
I was out cocktailing with other counsel past midnight last night. You don't have to take those late night booty calls from me, Jim. It's okay. Counselor, the U.S. Supreme Court dropped some rulings today, but the most eagerly anticipated ruling perhaps of the entire session, they still haven't dropped the immunity, the presidential immunity question. That one's coming on Monday. But let me start. The January 6th, the justices on a 6-3 vote, straight down party lines, if you will, struck down the obstruction charge used for 100 of January 6th rioters. Is this a tell, Jim, if you were reading tea leaves? This sure does come off as partisan to me, but what's your thought, Counselor?
So two things. Yeah, this wasn't a surprise much from the oral argument. There was still some hope that the Supreme Court would adopt sort of a reasonable, rational interpretation of this particular statute, which 18 U.S.C. 1512. We talked a lot about that on this particular wonderful broadcast. But in the end, you're right. And the only small academic amendment I would make in all of that is that in this particular case, that is these obstruction charges case, we do have this increasing defection, if you will, in two directions. One is that Amy Coney Barrett actually joins Sonia Sotomayor and Elena Kagan going the opposite direction, and Ketanji Brown Jackson joins the conservatives. So you get the 6-3, but it's a little different configuration here. Mm-hmm. And the big news, of course,
I stand corrected, Counselor.
It's a small thing. We it's going down that rabbit hole. It's very wonky, I know. But those of us like the two of you and all your other listeners love this kind of stuff. You also see, again, it's not the big story of these recent days, but Amy Coney Barrett more and more separating herself from the conservatives. We've also got that pollution case. Maybe we'll talk about that at some point. She also joins the other side and says, you know what? This is just not, doesn't make sense. She's also taken Clarence Thomas on this focus on history. She did that a couple of times last week in writing. And so this is a very interesting development at the end of this term that Amy Coney Barrett, of all people, is suddenly making her own path and saying not so much. And she's joining the so-called liberals, not necessarily to change the results of these cases, but nonetheless to articulate her own views, which are not those with whom she was otherwise been allied.
Well, Jim, that makes for interesting metrics, but the striking down of the obstruction, federal obstruction charges, these are two of the major charges Jack Smith has leveled against the former president over the January 6th. This is supposed to be the Chutkan trial if we ever get around to an immunity decision, but this is about half the charges against Trump in that trial. This does have an impact on the former president. You got to believe he's going to appeal his own charges, right, Jim?
Right. Absolutely. So again, it has these two great effects, and that is the greater impact. You've got this impact on maybe as many as 300 of the actual riders on the ground that day. Many of them also charged and convicted of other things. So it's not as if we open up the jailhouse doors to all of them, but it does affect all of them. And so the courts are going to have to go back to the extent it's appropriate and modify all that. But you've identified the big one. This is why this is the other Trump case that is now decided. As you just indicated, four of the counts against him by Jack Smith, the grand jury in the federal election case, also under Section 1512. Jack Smith has always maintained that he has got some theories, and you can make them based upon what the Supreme Court has said today, that differentiates what the Supreme Court is doing with the on-the-ground people from Donald Trump, doing different kinds of things. And so all is not lost when it comes to that, but you better believe, to your good point, that right now, if not before, Donald Trump's defense attorneys are already putting together the motion to dismiss those two counts based upon what the Supreme Court did earlier today. I'm going to move, again, Tanya Chutkan, when she gets this whole thing back in front of her, lots of things for her to do, to dismiss those counts. She is going to have hearings and briefings on all of this. And undeniably, there's going to be at least a motion to dismiss. Interesting to see whether or not she interprets Fisher to apply to Donald Trump. If she does, she dismisses those counts. They go away. The government may be able to appeal, regardless of who wins, goes up to the Court of Appeals, could come back to the Supreme Court in, yes, that's right, 2025 for more review on this issue. And then, of course, as you said, the big one is we're all waiting for immunity and for the Supreme Court to tell us if they are so bold as to do this in American history, that there is a category of things that a president can do while you are in the Oval Office in the White House that are crimes for which you cannot be prosecuted. Regardless of how you parse that, whether they're not going to do complete immunity, but they may find some distinctions here as we've talked. And if they do that, even if it's not the total thing that Donald Trump wants, that is a stunning thing for us to hear in 2024 in the wake of 240 some years of American history.
But Jim, they could also send it back to the lower courts, effectively create a delay in the trial, which would be just as effective to push this beyond the election, which is all Donald Trump's been hoping for, because if reelected, he's going to tell the DOJ, you're not going to prosecute me.
Right. Absolutely. So that's probably the best prediction here based upon the oral argument. What they're going to do, Amy Coney Barrett and John Roberts saying, gosh, the lower courts kind of got this wrong. And Amy Coney Barrett says, can't you parse out what is official and what is personal? You can't do that. It's all an integrated conspiracy, as the attorney for the government said. But the best guess based upon the oral argument is they're going to come up with some hybrid here, some definitional thing, and not be very clear about this. Send it back to Tanya Chutkan and say, here, Tanya, you go ahead. You figure this out based upon the definition, the extent the Supreme Court can provide it. You parse through all this and you figure out what is and is not subject to prosecution, and then issue an order. And that one, too, then will go up to the Court of Appeals, back to the Supreme Court. Again, 2025, maybe 2026 even. It is delay, delay. There is absolutely no chance that any of this can be tried anytime soon.
Folks, you're listening to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. James Santel, former U.S. Attorney, host of Amicus, right on the Civic Media Broadcast Network, Saturdays, 9 to 11 a.m. Jim, always a pleasure, man. Before we move on to the Chevron case, this Fisher case, this obstruction case, according to the Washington Post, to use the obstruction statute, Roberts said the prosecutors must establish that a defendant impaired the availability or integrity of records, documents, or other objects used in an official proceeding. Now, certainly, you know, the randoms coming down to the Capitol, and that was their only charge. Okay, but is it possible that Jack Smith has very specific other evidence against Donald Trump with regards to the obstruction on that charge?
Absolutely. And so he has always said that, regardless of what the Supreme Court has done. And you're right. What you've got is a narrow reading by the Supreme Court based upon the statutory history. It's Sarbanes-Oxley and has to be document related to those kinds of things. But again, even as Jack Smith has said, as your question suggests as well, there are other ways not only of interpreting what the Supreme Court has said, but also applying that very interpretation to what is charged here, describing very differently what was on the ground and what Donald Trump has done. And so is Jack Smith going to push back on this motion to dismiss? As to 1512, as to the statutory Fisher thing, you bet he is. And it's entirely possible that, again, that Tanya Chutkan can look at all this and say, I know Mr. Fisher's judgment gets vacated, but nothing about this, nothing about this, and the Supreme Court's opinion today means that Donald Trump's two counts out of the four go away. She could enter that order. And again, we may get a so-called interlocutory appeal on it. But there is a more than credible argument that even under this narrow interpretation the Supreme Court has embraced and articulated today, even under that, Donald Trump does not get away. And my bias is always clear. My view is that the statute is broad enough, again, to encompass what he has done. I would certainly, not that Jack Smith needs or wants my involvement in this, but I would certainly support the kind of very thoughtful articulation that he can and will do to discriminate between the people on the ground and Donald Trump, what the Supreme Court has said today, and a broader interpretation of 1512.
Jim, the Chevron case, another case, 6-3 opinion, brought down ideological lines, a 40-year precedent. You know, if we're going to throw things out, I mean, why stop with Roe? Here comes Chevron. Now, this is going to, what, curb the ability of federal agencies to, what, enforce the rules from the environment to banking to drugs, according to the Washington Post. It seems overreach to the other side, but apparently Roberts thinks that, you know, Chevron was, quote, a judicial invention that required judges to disregard their statutory duties. Counselor, what's your take on this case?
Well, needless to say, I'm of the view that this is another wrong decision. Again, not that my vote counts at all. My perspective is certainly subject to dispute as well. But again, you've got a 6-3 in this one is right down ideological lines. You have this notion of Chevron. It's been out there for 40 years, and that's the point, too. We're overruling 40 rules of precedent basically to say that when you've got a statute that is ambiguous, Congress isn't clear, that the courts should defer to the federal judges, federal agencies, rather, in making that determination. That has been the standard by which we've done these cases for 40 years. It's a huge matter. We should talk maybe on the other side about the impact. I've always maintained that absent immunity, this is the most significant case on the docket of the Supreme Court this term.
Jim Sentell, our fine guest, he's sticking around. I hope you do as well. Jim, I also have questions. If you've been monitoring the mini hearings in Eileen Cannon's courtroom, and there seemingly is perhaps a willingness for her to throw out tons of the evidence against the very man that appointed her to that bench. She has very much played the partisan role, seemingly. We don't know what's in her heart and mind, but we suspect greatly, at least I do. Come back, James Santel, the devil's advocates in you. It's a Friday edition, thank God.
The devil's advocates, making radio great again.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. We got a fine guest. He's sticking around. He is James Santel. And my partner, Dom, I think it's your turn to talk, man. I'll let you go.
Yes. Thank you, Jim. Getting back to the Chevron case, as mentioned, this one came down long ideological lines. Sotomayor, Kagan, Ketanji Brown Jackson dissenting. Kagan said that the majority has turned itself into the country's administrative czar. Apparently, reading her dissent from the bench, according to the Washington Post, she said that is unwisely setting up the Supreme Court, Jim, and courts in general as the final arbiter of regulatory matters in which they are not experts. Kagan said the power rightly belongs with federal agencies. This is a sea change. Certainly, the ground moving under our feet, Jim. What's the practical implication of this new environment we're working in now?
Sure, it is huge. And again, this is also very wonky, and I know an awful lot of people out there may think, oh gosh, has to do with the change in legal standards here. It really is important because it affects all kinds of agencies out there. Here's the notion. Federal judges, as much as they are, of course, small gods, as we all well know, do not know everything. And so again, when there's a statute or something else has to be interpreted, who do you go to in life generally? And when you're on the bench, you go to the people who, let's fill in the blank, know what they're talking about. You go to the experts, right? The scientists, the medical people, the engineers, the masons, the educators, all the people who do these things on a regular basis. And you ask them and you say, gee, what has been your practical experience? What should we do here? And that has been our tradition for 40 years. And it's worked pretty well, not perfectly. It's not to say that federal judges should defer completely, but that's the deference that we're talking about. As Elena Kagan says in that piece that you just read from, this changes everything. And it basically says that now federal judges, again, many gods that they purport to be even more now, can simply say, well, no, as Judge Kaczmarek did in that Mifepristone case, I just don't like what the FDA has done for 25 years. I'm thinking that my own gut tells me that what they're doing is wrong, and I'm going to substitute that, my own sense, for what the experts tell me. This isn't a direct attack. This is a part of a larger political effort, as you well know, on this so-called deep administrative state. We can't have these mysterious people out there making these decisions for us. That's, of course, what Donald Trump and others are saying. It's inside our federal courts. It's inside the Supreme Court. And today, that administrative state craziness was the decision by the Supreme Court to say, yes, indeed, as the Chief Justice said, agencies have no special competence. What, Mr. Supreme Court Chief Justice? No special competence? Again, overturning not only the history on this, but also telling civil servants who act on behalf of the people that they don't know what they're talking about, and therefore we judges should decide everything. It is, again, as I've said before, absent the immunity case, which has now been given greater force than it should have, this is the single most troubling thing on the court's docket and should have been at the top of the list. Immunity now takes that place, assuming the court does something equally stunning on Monday.
Jim, about the only thing I supported the court in this entire term was throwing Steve Bannon's ass in jail. And they don't actually, you know, shepherd him down to the jail, but they didn't give him a get out of jail free card. You know, maybe Trump's is coming on Monday, but Bannon's got to take his ass to jail on Monday.
Absolutely.
I perceive that as good news, counselor.
It is. And again, you'd like to think that this Supreme Court, they are jurists, they're sworn to uphold the law. He has been convicted. All of his convictions have been upheld. For those people who might say that he was railroaded, witch hunt, no, like everybody else, he's gotten his complete due process, equal protection, and the judgment has been affirmed. Nothing else to see here. Now it is time, just like Peter Navarro, apparently becoming out of his four-month prison term fairly soon. Now, Steve, it's time for you to go to prison, and justice is done here. And the Supreme Court once again said, nothing more to look at here. Spend some time with the Bureau of Prisons in the federal system.
Jim, the classified documents case, Trump's case in West Palm Beach, the Eileen Cannon case, and we've talked often about the fact that before this even started, she was slapped down by the 11th Circuit, putting a special master in place, extending rights to the former president that don't really exist under law. And then she caught the Trump classified documents case. And many have said she's, you know, been a combination of naive or inexperienced and partisan. And we've also discussed maybe she could be removed or there could be a replacement of her as the judge for cause. Jim, are we any closer to the point where Eileen Cannon doesn't get to give Trump basically immunity in her courtroom?
Right. I think we are. And I have to believe, again, Jack Smith, a very bright person, much brighter than I will ever be, and much more thoughtful about these things. He's got a list of all the things that she has done, including that civil case where the 11th Circuit said, no, you're not even close to being right here. But even since the time that this case was supposedly randomly assigned to her, a whole list of things you indicated right before the break. Also, this latest thing, to go into it just a little bit, she previously said that, yeah, some evidence that has to do with a fellow named Evan Corcoran, who is Donald Trump's former attorney, that would come in over this thing called the crime fraud exception. So that was a win for the government. Now, just last week, this past week or so, she's saying, well, maybe I'm going to revisit that. And maybe indeed the defense is right that I should not permit into the trial, into evidence, once again, of the crimes engaged in by this defendant. She's got rights to do that. But again, the notion that she would revisit this and again articulate in support of what may be an unfavorable ruling, reversing herself based upon really nothing other than an inclination that she wants Donald Trump to succeed here. Very, very troubling. That's number, 17, 18 on Jack Smith's list. At some point, he may, in fact, want to go, whether it's to the chief judge of the district, who has already asked her to recuse herself, as we talked before, or even back to the 11th Circuit. So, you know what? Here's a list of all the things that she has done. They show unmistakably a clear bias. They're not supported, and she needs to be removed from this case. He is definitely considering it. It's a big move, but at some point, his hand may be forced.
Don't forget, tune in for Amicus, a law review on the Civic Media Network, hosted by James Santel, Saturday mornings, 9 to 11. Jim, final question. The sentencing of Donald Trump. How many months, how many days, how many years, you know, would you predict, counselor?
Sure. Juan Michon, very, very balanced here. I think he is a man who wants to do some justice here. There's some precedent for putting people in jail for limited periods of time. I'm going to go maybe weeks, maybe a month. I think Donald Trump should get some time in detention and should not be simply placed on probation. We'll see if Juan Michon, who's this very balanced person, goes down that road. He's got a basis to do it. It would be upheld.
As long as that jail ain't Mar-a-Lago. James Santel, have a great show tomorrow. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Jim.
Always a pleasure.
The Devil's Advocates, making radio great again.
It's another tequila sunrise. Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, the Friday happy hour, the post-debate hangover edition. It wasn't quite sunrise, but the night did get late last night, Dom. Again, many thanks to all that showed up at the Barrymore Theater. And, you know, the party was great.
Party was great, man. We love to see so many people. Thank you for all the shots and the loose joints. That's great conversation, well, meeting people. So much fun.
I got no loose joints last night. I was so disappointed. You are horking all the loose joints, aren't you? Dom, I feel like Joe Biden might have lost the presidency last night. Him out, but they're not going to reelect him, and I mean the American people. Here are some of the people on the text line, and you can join us. This last half an hour is for you to respond any way you see fit, as long as it's FCC compliant, 844-967-2789. Here are a few of the text thoughts. Now, LA Tom's lighting it up out there. I'm not going to read them all, Tom, but here's one of his concluding thoughts. Joe surrounds himself around competent people. Trump will only care about who bows to him. I've never questioned whether or not Joe Biden has been an effective president up until now. My question is the candidate and whether or not the American people perceive him to be capable. Bob from Madison says, Crudy, you're still butthurt about Bernie. I don't think that's what's influencing me today. Bernie Sanders is in the state of Wisconsin. I thought about going up to Stevens Point and seeing him today. Bernie is saying, hey, man, Joe had a disastrous debate, but I need you to vote for him. And we do. We need you to vote for Joe Biden. It really comes down to three states. We still have a say. Each and every one of us have a say. I'm not telling you don't vote for the man, but I'm not going to pretend like that was not a disastrous performance that turned some voters away from Joe Biden. And the margins are so minuscule in these swing states, states like Wisconsin. All it takes is 10,000 people swinging out of 3+ million voters. Here's a little bit more on the text line. Matt from Richland Center says, take it easy, Crudy. It's like I'm watching the MSNBC crew go full DEFCON 1. This is why we lose so much. We piss our pants over every little mishap. This part, I like, Matt. The rest of it, yes. A little coarse.
Yeah, thank you. Get there. I think I know where you're going.
If Republicans can stand behind a lying felon, we can stand behind Joey. A lot of time
lying
left.
Rapist felon with more charges coming and court cases and just, you know, again, and listen to the responses to the questions last night. I mean, it's fair to criticize Joe. No question about it. We're doing it. We're going to do it. He deserves it. the handlers. Joe deserves it for putting himself in that situation. The people who worked him up and got him going, send him in their horse and tired with too many numbers in it. Don't do that. Bad. It was bad all the way around. The moderators didn't moderate. I mean, if all you're going to do is punch a ticket to make sure a clock, to make sure they don't go over without, you know, talking about the context and the actual things that they're saying, when you, Jake Tapper, know specifically some of the things that are coming out of their mouths are very false and you decline to address it. I mean, this thing was a disaster all the way around. Now, Joe's going to get the biggest beating out of this, I have no doubt. But we got a long way to go before this next election. We'll have another debate, maybe. We'll see. And we have, you know, RNC, DNC. We have court cases coming down. We have Supreme Court cases coming down. This will, and I think to Joe's end, you know, when you look back in 2 months from now, will this still be on the radar? Yeah, maybe, maybe not.
Dominic, there are also lots of text submissions like this one. Can you please address the fact that Biden is not a good candidate and we need to move on with somebody else because the whole country saw how much of a disaster he was last night? There are a lot of entries on the text line that read similarly to that. So I want to ask you and the American people, those listening to us, the millions of them potentially, should Joe be replaced? And I know some of you on the text line are, oh, it's so hard. The New York Times editorial board within the last hour came out and said, Joe Biden, do what's right for the country and step aside. Step down. That's the New York Times editorial board. When the Democrats lose the New York Times, it's not just Crudy being butthurt over Bernie. You know what I mean? Well, it's people facing facts.
Raw Story has never done an editorial. They're saying this basically the same thing. Our pal, our guest from the other day, Crudy, Bill Press. He had a little bit out there posted on his BillPressPods.com. I'm just going to read one paragraph. Now there's only one way forward. As painful as it is for me to say it, for the good of the party, for the good of the nation, Joe Biden should step aside. Again, Bill Press. He should release his pledged delegates, declare an open convention, and let the party choose another younger, more energetic nominee. Make Donald Trump the addled old guy in this race. There's still time, and there's no lack of talent. Think Gretchen Whitmer, Gavin Newsom, Kamala Harris, Josh Shapiro, J.B. Pritzker, Wes Moore. Any one of them can beat Donald Trump, according to our pal, Bill Press.
Well, I don't know that there's any guaranteed punch-your-ticket-to-the-White-House candidate sitting on the bench. I think strategically, Gretchen Whitmer would make a lot of sense. Michigan's going to be a very important state. We will get to your calls, and I'll continue monitoring the text line. Same number both ways, 844-967-2789. I want to give you a little of what the Washington Post, Aaron Blake, says on this very topic. The headline, 10 options if Democrats actually try to replace Biden. I was interviewed by The Guardian earlier today, and I don't think Joe stepping aside. I don't think Joe will face the music. And there's only one person, I think, that's influential enough in Joe's life that he could change his mind. And I think that would be his wife, Jill Biden. I think if Dr. Jill Biden says, Joe, you know, time to move on. Let's go enjoy some time with grandkids or whatever. Let's go work on your golf game, Joe. Let's let someone else serve the American people, because I fear the trajectory after last night. We're going to see it in the new polling that comes out next week before the 4th. And we're going to see Joe Biden losing in a lot of swing states, a lot of the most important states. Joe Biden was always up prior. Hillary Clinton was up on Trump prior in the polling. This is how much this nation has changed under 8 years, dude. Suddenly Trump is up and Trump's going to be up more. And the polling always seemingly underreported Trump support amongst the people. So I am very concerned, and I only have one vote, and I only have one voice. But I think it's time to stop pussyfooting around and start calling a spade, and Joe Biden, step aside. It's time, sir. Now, do I think he's going to take my advice? Hell no. Will Jill Biden come to my aid? Probably not. Will Joe Biden be on the ticket in November? Probably. And will he lose? I'm afraid so. Here is what the Aaron Blake at the Post is reporting the Democratic Party has spent much of 2024's campaign burying its head in the sand over Americans concerned about President Biden's age and mental sharpness. Rather than reckon with the problem, its most influential voices have cast it as overblown media construct. But the party abruptly jerked its head out of the sand last night after a meandering, occasionally incoherent and almost universally panned first debate performance from Biden. At its most pronounced, this had led, has led to calls for Biden to step aside, including from those loyal to him. That instantaneous reaction is hugely significant in and of itself. It's the kind of conversation you avoid, and the party is strained to avoid, until you view it as absolutely necessary. Going there and then having Biden stay would only damage him further, because a bunch of allies would have to say either implicitly or explicitly that he is not up to the task. It is truly a desperate plan, and one that features many hurdles. It would almost surely require Biden's assent to step aside. Again, I don't think he's changing his mind. He's out on the stump in North Carolina today. He was much stronger, but 50 million people weren't watching the North Carolina rally, as you pointed out to me, Dom. As Aaron Blake writes, he holds almost all of the pledged delegates to August's Democratic National Convention. And even then, the process of replacing him is fraught. It's not even clear that the alternative would render the party better off. But it's a prospect that the party has given some consideration, dating back to when Biden had yet to announce his re-election campaign last year. Names were floated as alternatives and even primary challengers. So, should the party go this route, who would even make sense? Let's recap some names. Float some speculation here, Dom. And I would also like to take the temperature, the sentiment of the audience. I'm not saying you don't like Joe. I know. I like Joe. I like Joe's presidency. I like that Joe has gotten things accomplished in a bipartisan fashion. I think he's accomplished far more than I ever thought he was going to be able to based on the makeup of the Congress. If Joe had come out last night like the State of the Union or like North Carolina today, you wouldn't be hearing any of this blather from me.
So if it wasn't, and let me just kind of hear this, and not just blather from you, Crudy. I mean, it's justified. Lots of people are thinking about this, as we all should. But if it's just a bad day, and the older you get, man, you're probably going to have more bad days. If he was good at the State of the Union, he was good today at North Carolina. Can't you check it off as a bad day and just, you know, hope he does better next time? I mean, the results are going to be what the results are going to be. People are going to see that. They're going to interpret it their own way. Everybody will. Maybe some folks will see how he did today in North Carolina. Maybe he won't. Maybe some folks will see Donald Trump's tripping over himself last night. Hard to focus on that when everything's about Joe. When everything's about Joe. Couldn't it be just a bad night, man? Couldn't it be an overreaction?
Well, I hope it's a wake-up call for the Democratic Party. Because I'm tired of people telling me to keep my mouth shut and just get on the Joe bandwagon. Damn, he's sharp. Really? Not the guy I watched. I didn't even understand what the hell he was trying to say most of the time, and he's putting forth his own policies. If you cannot communicate effectively, you cannot lead.
Did Donald Trump communicate effectively?
I never said he was a leader either.
Well, okay, but this is what we're talking about. It's not just Joe Biden up on stage by himself. Okay. You're right. He wasn't articulate. Let's talk about the other guy's articulation. He was terrible, man. He was terrible.
But we've talked about the fact his team is enthused to go vote for him. Who do you know right now in your life? And I've talked to my wife and family and friends, lots of people calling me this morning. Nobody was enthused other than those saying, I'm going to vote for Joe Biden even if he's a dead cardboard cutout. Well, that's just telling me you're completely opposed to Donald Trump. I get that. We all are. Or at least those of us, you know, no offense, CJ, those of us with reasonable minds. We all oppose Trump. And Joe Biden was the candidate that was supposed to be able to beat Trump. That's why Obama got on board and Buttigieg and Klobuchar. Everyone cast their weight for Joe in 2020 because the pandemic was setting in and the primary season needed to come to an end. And everybody got on the Joe bandwagon, including yours truly. Bernie Loving Crudy, got on the Joe bandwagon, voted for him, campaigned for him, stumped on the air constantly for the man. But you know what? I'm done pretending like this guy's ready to lead the nation. If I see another repeat of that performance, dude, don't ask me to say anything good about the man. Not as a candidate, not as a guy who's got to go earn votes, because that's still part of the process. You don't just get the office. You know, if it was a job interview, he didn't get hired last night.
Yeah, did Donald Trump get hired last night? Is that the guy you're hiring last night between those two candidates? That's who you're hiring, because you only got two candidates. Tell me who you're hiring based on last night.
Well, I tell you what, the MAGA faithful love their guy.
Of
think
course
he
they
killed
do.
It.
Yeah, he killed it. He was very confident in his BS. That's what hucksters do.
The New York Times
two guys
and Fox
on the stage,
News.
That's all you got. You got two employees or two candidates for the job, and you're very disappointed with the one guy you wanted to hire. You hiring the other guy? I don't think so, dude.
Fox News did not drop an editorial today asking Donald Trump to drop out. The New York Times dropped an editorial asking Joe Biden to do what's right for the nation and drop out. Come back. More Devils. Your final opinions of the day. Here are the grievances. 844-967.
Chicken! When they go low, we get high. The Devil's Advocates.
Hey, thank you for listening to the Devil's Advocates radio show. Our last segment of the day, of the week. If you got something to say, hit us up on the lines. Going there shortly at 844-967-2789. Callers, be patient. Rich, we'll slowly screen you.
I've got a few of the texts. I can get to them right away. Sheila of Oregon, Wisconsin says, please stop with the replacement theory. Not helpful. Are you talking to me or the New York Times editorial board? Just wondering. Here's another texter. Nothing will make Joe young again. We all saw it. And he's only getting 5 years older. Unelectable. I'll say it again. Unelectable. Don't let the dim spin make you believe otherwise. Time will only weaken him more. Here's another one. WMDX. Actually, this one, I can give you an easy answer. Is it possible to get your interview with Joe Zepecki so I can share it with my friends who do not listen to you? It's the best comments I've heard yet. Yes, Joe, much more optimistic than Crudy today. The podcast, always available at darnwi.com. And if you can't remember that, just go crutandom.com.
Or domandcrute.com.
Apparently both versions work, although, you know, the kind of day I'm having, Tom might have already cut off the crutandom.com. Here is another texter. It doesn't matter what Trump said. He looked alive, vigorous, versus a dying man. This race is now DJT versus a senior with dementia. You need a leader. Joe is not it. It's over. That's not Crudy. I'm just reading text here, folks. Even if Trump passes away, I want that Florida case to keep going. We needs the real answers about that. Yeah, absolutely. Well, I'm cheering for the man to eat a lot more Big Macs this weekend. Celebratory Big Macs. Go have 10. 844-967-2789. Dom, we should probably get to the callers. Make sure we leave some time. Alan from Hoosier, Indiana. Welcome, sir.
Oh, wow.
Hey, Alan.
Hey, guys, so it's probably been like 4 years since I've talked to you.
Welcome back.
Thanks for calling, man.
So did we beat Medicare or was it a stutter?
Yeah, we beat it in a submission.
I wasn't clear what Joe was trying to communicate at that moment in history, Alan.
Neither was he. And
fair enough. Now, Alan, did Donald Trump, did Nancy Pelosi deny the troops as well?
It doesn't matter what Donald Trump
does. Well, of course it matters, because if you're going to judge one guy for a statement, how do you give a pass for the other guy? I'm just asking, man. You cannot. You're going to listen, and then you can respond. If you're going to call up and say it, and it's justifiably so, the guy went off. He had a brain fart, went off more than one time. Fair enough. What about the other guy who continually, I don't know if it's purposeful lying or if he's really losing his mind, you don't think that has any effect? Now you go, Alan.
the other guy, his voters will show up regardless. What's going to happen is people will not show up for Biden. That's the issue. You, what you're saying about like comparing them is irrelevant. Absolutely irrelevant.
So we shouldn't compare them. Okay, man.
No, that's not the issue. The issue is whether people will show up for Biden, and they will not. So they need to replace him, because everybody was freaking out last night. I could not believe the neoliberals that were just unhinged about what happened. And that's what you need to listen to. Like, if you want to go, you need to get Gretchen Whitmer, not Gavin Newsom, because Gavin Newsom's horrible. And you need to replace Kamala, put her somewhere, and actually make something happen. Like, look, I grew up in Wausau. Like, I grew up, you know, in the heart of Wisconsin. I live in Indiana. It's a hellhole. Like, this place sucks. Like, get that through your head. I have to deal with these crappy red a-holes every day. And, like, I don't even know how to express how much that sucks.
I think you just did, Alan. Well said. appreciate your call. We want to get more opinions in. 844-967-2789. Our party and buddy Wisco Paul saw you and your daughter last night. And Wisco, your daughter was very complimentary because I was wearing a suit.
Hey, Wisco.
Well, happy Friday to you boys. It's always fun getting together with you guys. Yeah. I always have fun. Yeah, what did you say? You were a sharp-dressed man or something like that. So that was
not nice at all like the bouncer at a Chippendales show where Dom's the star on the stage and I'm collecting tickets at the front door.
Yeah. She's a lot nicer than I am, Cody. But it seems to me last night when I was talking to you, you said that basically, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, that even a radio host, if you do a lot of shows, you can kind of get burned out and have a bad day or a bad night.
Sure.
And I think that's the case with Joe. And the reason I say that is because I was fortunate enough to watch Joe on today on TV, and he was made two stops, North Carolina and New York, and he looked sharp. I don't know what happened to him last night, but I will tell you this much. What just ticked me off is, did people actually listen to Trump? I mean, they should be talking about the off-the-wall stuff he said. Now, Biden's, what really hurt Biden was, you know, he had that, what do you call it, a meltdown at the beginning, but after that, it kind of picked it up, you know.
Appreciate it, Wisco. Going to try to sneak one more in here. Jake from Eureka, California. Jake, what do you got for us? Make it quick, fella.
Hey, Jake.
Real quick, is the silver lining in this is it happened in June and not in October, and we still have time to change horses.
Change horses. So you would replace Biden, Jake.
I think it's time that we accept the fact that he's not going to be able to serve for another 4 years.
Appreciate your call, Jake. Thank
just
you all
serve
for listening.
Another 5 months, man.
Thank you to Joe Zepecki, our optimistic Dim strategist friend. Find him on the podcast at darnwi.com. Also, thanks to James Santel, fine host of Amicus, a law review. Listen tomorrow morning, 9 to 11. Diamond Crute will be back on Monday for the Trump immunity ruling from the Supreme Court.